All right, continuing in our series in the book of Judges, our text for today is chapter 17 and 18. Again, we're not going to read all of that. We'll read a portion. There was a man of the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, "The 1,100 pieces of silver that were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse, and also spoke it in my ears, behold, the silver is with me. I took it." And his mother said, "Blessed be my son by the Lord." And he restored the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother. And his mother said, "I will dedicate the silver to the Lord from my hand for my son, to make a carved image and a metal image. Now therefore I will restore it to you." So when he restored the money to his mother took 200 pieces of silver and gave it to the silversmith, who made it into a carved image and a metal image. And it was in the house of Micah. And the man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and household gods, and he ordained one of his sons who became his priest. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now there was a young man of Bethlehem in Judah, of the family of Judah, who was a Levite. He sojourned there. And the man departed from the town of Bethlehem in Judah to sojourn where he could find a place. And as he journeyed, he came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah. And Micah said to him, "Where do you come from?" And he said to him, "I'm a Levite of Bethlehem in Judah, and I'm going to sojourn where I may find a place." And Micah said to him, "Stay with me, and be to me a father and a priest, and I will give to you 10 pieces of silver a year, and a suit of clothes, and your living." And the Levite went in, and the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man became like one of his sons. And Micah ordained the Levite, and the young man became his priest. It was in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, "I know that the Lord will prosper me because I have a Levite as a priest." In those days, there was no king in Israel, and in those days, the tribe of the people of Dan was seeking for itself an inheritance to dwell in, for until then, no inheritance among the tribes of Israel had fallen to them. So the people of Dan sent 5 able men from the whole number of their tribe, from Zorah and Eshtahol, to spy out the land and explore it. And they said to them, "Go and explore the land." And they came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and they lodged there. When they were by the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young Levite, and they turned inside and said to him, "Who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What's your business here?" And he said to them, "This is how Micah dealt with me. He has hired me, and I have become his priest." And they said to him, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether the journey on which we are setting out will succeed." And the priest said to them, "Go in peace. The journey on which you go is under the eye of the Lord." Now, the final 5 chapters of Judges constitute 2 chronological appendices to the book, omitting any reference to judges or times of oppression. Both episodes recounted in this section occurred early in the period of the judges and illustrate the moral and religious decay that led many to call for the appointment of a king. The key expression in these chapters is, "In those days, Israel had no king." That's a quote from Wolf. Well, the story begins with Micah's mother. Now, again, this is not the same Micah who is a prophet who wrote a book by the same name. It's not him, different guy, different era. But his mother apparently could not find 1,100 pieces of silver. That's a pretty significant loss, I would think. Micah confesses that he took them and returns them to her. But then a strange, evil thing happens. His mother said, "Blessed be my son by Yahweh," God's name. And he restored the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother. And his mother said, "I dedicate the silver to Yahweh from my hand for my son, to make a carved image and a metal image. Now therefore I will restore it to you." So she acknowledges Yahweh and then directly seeks to break the second commandment with a blatant contradiction. "I devote this silver to Yahweh, now go make a carved image." As Wolf pointed out, this is probably early on in the period of the judges. So right from the start, there's this craving for idolatry in the land. Verse 4, when he restored the money to his mother took 200 pieces of silver, gave it to the silversmith, made it into a carved image and a metal image, and it was in the house of Micah. And he had a shrine, and he made an ephod and household gods and ordained one of his sons to become his priest. So at his house, he had this shrine, or a small sanctuary kind of thing. And now he adds these new idols along with the ones that he had already had. With that, an ephod, that's that apron-like thing that a priest wears, and small household gods, little bitty things that you set around your house. Now, we're not told, but I wonder, is that how he made his living? People would come to the shrine, they would have to pay to use it, or just take an offering or whatever it be, and that's how he lived. We don't know. An important point and theme of the entire book of Judges follows in the text. In those days, there was no king. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. So one of the purposes of the book of Judges was to pave the way for the people demanding a king, which happens in the book of 1 Samuel. Without a king, it was chaos and continual turning away from God to all sorts of false gods. What we have seen thus far has been a turning to the gods of the nations around them. But here, Micah, well, is he actually creating a new god, or are these things all to represent Yahweh? It's hard to know. But he certainly isn't following what Yahweh said about he is to be worshipped. Well, the story takes a turn then, takes us to Bethlehem, to a Levite living or sojourning there. Why was he there? We're not told. Bethlehem was not a Levite town. He apparently was not content there. And we read in verse 8, and the man departed from the town of Bethlehem in Judah to sojourn where he could find a place. And his journey and came to the hill country of Ephraim to the house of Micah. So he wanted to get out of Bethlehem for whatever reason, and he heads north. And looking for a satisfactory place to live. He may have been looking for a Levite town, but he gets perhaps distracted by Micah. Micah makes him an offer to be his priest and minister there at the shrine in his house. Stay with me, be a father to me and a priest. I will give you 10 pieces of silver a year, a suit of clothes, and your living. So he gets his regular stipend for his living, his probably in food, and he's got a place to stay, he's got food to eat, plus the annual silver and a set of clothes every year. So the Levite was content to dwell with him, and he became like one of his sons. And Micah ordained the Levite, and the young man became his priest and was in the house of Micah. So he lived there at Micah's house. But then listen to what Micah says. Now I know that the Lord will prosper me because I have a Levite as a priest. What a messed up way to think. He has a shrine filled with graven images forbidden by the law of God, direct defiance of God, and now he thinks because he had waylaid a Levite to come, and the Levite was dedicated to serve at the tabernacle, but he's going to come now and serve in this shrine. Now he thinks the Lord is really going to bless me because I got a Levite. This Levite should have known better. And not only should have refused to serve at Micah's shrine, he should have rebuked him for the idolatry and perhaps even destroyed the shrine. He failed in his calling, and he takes up now this illegitimate position as Micah's priest. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. Well, chapter 18 switches the focus. The tribe of Dan had a territory that was allotted to them by God. If you have one of those maps there, pull out the one that has the tribes on it, that side, and you can see right next to Ephraim is the tribe of Dan. Well, they never fully conquered their land. Wolf said this, the plight of the tribe of Dan was first mentioned in chapter 1, verses 34 and 35, where the Amorites prevented the Danites from taking possession of their inheritance. Caught in a squeeze between the Amorites and the Philistines to the west and the territory of Judah to the south, the Danites sought out a new homeland and clearly felt that the boundary lines had not fallen for them in pleasant places. Their desire to move revealed a lack of faith in the Lord, who had allotted to them their original territory. So they thought they needed to find a better place, better than the land that the Lord had allotted to them. So they send out 5 spies to check out a better place. The spies come to Micah's house and recognize the voice, or it could mean that they recognized his accent, not the sound of his voice, but the way he spoke. And they inquire of him, who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What's your business here? It seems that they were perplexed by his presence there in Ephraim. He tells them that Micah hired him to be his priest. As soon as they find out he's functioning as a priest, then they seek his services. They say to him, inquire of God, please, that we may know whether the journey on which we're setting out will succeed. And the priest said to them, go in peace. The journey on which you go is under the eye of the Lord. Now they tell him to inquire of God. They don't use Yahweh's name, but the priest does. It's under the eye of Yahweh. The Levite responds with the affirmative. We don't know if there was a little delay in there. It sounds like it just read, you know, should we go? Yep. I mean, that's what it sounds like when you read the text. We can't be sure of that. But did he in fact inquire of Yahweh? Danites didn't specify which God he was inquire of. From whatever source, he gives them the assurance that all would be well and that they should go ahead. But he does so in the name of Yahweh. Well, the spies go and check out the city of Laish. Look at what they report. Then the 5 men departed and came to Laish and saw the people who were there. They lived in security after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet, unsuspecting, lacking nothing, that is, in the earth and possessing wealth, and how they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone. Well, the people of Laish were living at peace, in prosperity, but they were kind of like loners. They had no allies close by. They may very well have been Sidonians that moved there, but Sidon was a good way away, so they had no one to turn to in a time of trouble. Probably seemed like easy prey for the Danites. Verse 8, when they came to their brothers at Zorah and Eshtaol, their brothers said to them, what do you report? And they said, arise, let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it's very good. And will you do nothing? Do not be slow to enter in and possess the land. Quite an interesting contrast here, isn't it, with these spies and the ones that Moses sent to spy out the land centuries before. These guys say, it's good, let's go, hurry up. We can take this. But the ones Moses sent out, at least 10 of them, said, it's good. But we can't take it. There's walled cities and giants. There's no way. Well, Moses' spies had God's command and promise behind them, and they still said no. These guys are going against what God had commanded by not settling the land that God had given them and going after other land. Now, does God use them to take that additional land? Yes. But their hearts were not right in doing so. Greed and self-interest take over. And they displace a people who weren't bothering anybody when the Lord had already given them land that they found too difficult to conquer. Can you see how every man did what was right in his own eyes is working out here? Well, so verse 11, so 600 men of the tribe of Dan, armed with weapons of war, sent out from Zorah and Eshtaol and went up and camped at Kiriath Jearim in Judah. And they passed on from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. Then the 5 men who had gone to scout out the country of Laish said to their brothers, do you know that in these houses there's an ephod and household gods and a carved image and a metal image? Now therefore consider what you will do. Well, the spies muster a bit of an army, 600. What do you think about what they say about Micah's place? Do you know? Is that how they ask? Do you know that there's this thing over there? It seems to me that they were indeed trying to entice them to stop at Micah's house and dally with the idols a bit. These were wicked men. Had they had wisdom and a mind trained in the law of God, they have led their army away from Micah's house and his shrine. What a different story it would have been had they said, "Do you know that in these houses there's an ephod and household gods and a carved image and a metal image? So let's pass by quickly and get out of here. Or even better, let's attack and destroy all the idols for the glory of Yahweh's name." Well, none of that happened. Doesn't that say to us the danger of playing around with our own idols, the things that we tolerate in our hearts and minds? We need to flee them or attack them and do away with the things that lead us astray. Well, not only do the Danites fail relative to the idols, they take them. Verse 15, they turned aside there and came to the house of the young Levite at the home of Micah and asked him about his welfare. Now the 600 men of the Danites, armed with their weapons of war, stood by the entrance of the gate, and the five men who had gone to scout out the land went up and entered and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. Now, neither Micah nor the Levite were in a position to rebuff this army of 600 trained and armed soldiers. But the Levite didn't need much convincing. Verse 18, when these went into Micah's house, they took the carved image and ephod and household gods and metal image. The priest said to them, "What are you doing?" And they said, "Keep quiet, put your hand on your mouth and come with us and be a father and a priest. It's better for you to priest of one man or a priest of a tribe and a clan in Israel." And the priest's heart was glad. He took up the ephod and the household gods, the carved image, and went along with the people. So their argument appealed to the Levite's sense of importance. Enough with Micah's little shrine here. I'm going to be priest of a whole tribe. So he takes all of Micah's idolatrous paraphernalia so that he can continue the false worship among the Danites when they finally settle in an area. The slippery slope is so evident here. Micah starts off the whole thing by making and housing some idols. The Levite, rather than standing for the law of God, cooperates with Michael and becomes an illicit priest. The Danites, rather than resisting the idolatry, claim the whole mess for themselves and run off with it. It goes from bad to worse. The city of Dan, in time, will become a center of idolatry. It's at the foot of Mount Hermon, a place known for idolatry and demonism and dealing with the underworld. Verse 22, when they had gone at a distance from the home of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house were called out, and they overtook the people of Dan, and they shouted at the people of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, "What's the matter with you that you come out with such a company?" And he said, "You take my gods that I made and the priest and go away, and what have I left? How then can you ask me, 'What's the matter with you?'" And the people of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows fall upon you, and you lose your life and the life of your household." Then the people of Dan went their way, and Micah saw that they were too strong for him. He turned and went back to his home. So Micah chases after them, but backs down. He was outnumbered, probably outarmed. Everything he had going for him had been taken. So you can see why he wanted his stuff back. But the Danites threaten his life and the life of his family, caused him to pause and think. As a result, he turns back, and we never hear of him again. He just blots out at that point. But it shows how deeply ingrained idolatry was among the Israelites at this time, and shows how futile it is also. A great lesson for us here, when we get our minds off of our great God and on to what the world has to offer, we can go seriously astray. It can cause all sorts of trouble and heartache from doing that. The refrain of Helen Lemmel's hymn states the remedy quite well. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will go strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. Look at the response that the Levite gave, verse 20. The priest's heart was glad. He took the ephod, the household gods, carved image, and went along with the people. He was happy in his sin and rebellion. We don't know anything more about him, but he's not in a good place. When we become content in our sin, then more than ever, we need to turn our eyes upon Jesus. Well, the story continues, verse 27, but the people of Dan took what Micah had made and the priest who belonged to him, and they came to Laish, to a people quiet and unsuspecting, and struck them with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire. And there was no deliverer because it was far from Sidon and they had no dealings with anyone. So the Danites carry out their desire, attack a peaceful, unsuspecting city and destroy it. They rebuild it and they live there, and they name it Dan after the father of their tribe. So if you ever wondered, if you're looking at a map, why the city of Dan is way up here and the territory of Dan is way down here, this is why they went and took it. And the idolatry continues there in the city of Dan. Verse 30, and the people of Dan set up the carved image for themselves, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, son of Moses, and his sons were priests to the tribe of the Danites until the day of captivity of the land. So they set up Micah's carved image that he made as long as the house of God was at Shiloh. Son of Moses there could mean descendant. I don't think we're talking about the grandson of Moses here. Wolf has this assessment of it. He said, there Micah's idols were set up, and Jonathan, son of Gershom, served as priest. Gershom was the son of Moses, but the Masoretes, they were the ones who dealt with the Old Testament text, inserted the letter Nun, an N, in his name, so that Manasseh was read their intention was doubtless to remove any taint of idolatry from Moses' revered name. But one only has to read about the golden calf of his brother Aaron to realize the family's potential for idolatry. So being related to Moses didn't stop it. Dan and Bethel were selected by Jeroboam I as sites for his golden calf worship in the northern kingdom. He may simply have continued the idolatrous tradition introduced at the founding of Dan. So a city just thoroughly invested in idolatry. Now we're ending our study of Judges here. The continual warning about serving anything other than God is bold here. It's clear here in Joshua, in Judges. The destruction that idolatry wreaked on the nation stands as a powerful lesson for us to turn away from anything that draws us away from the living and true God. God has called us in grace and mercy. He has drawn us to himself. He grants spiritual life and enables us to believe. So let's trust in our Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, the one who lived and died and rose again for us. And right now, he's praying for you. The allurements of the world and the power of the flesh are continually trying to draw us away, just like Micah's house. But we have a Savior more true, more powerful, more faithful than any of the judges that we've studied in this book. Our Savior can be trusted, and we must rest in him and his completed work for us. So delight in his work for you, delight in the work he's doing in you, and trust that he certainly can keep you faithful and keep you from turning away. One more time, turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will go strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. Let's come to his table.